This is PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller, along with Torch columnist Bruce Mitchell. This is the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, part two for Saturday, October 4th. Let's go right to the Ask Bruce mailbag. Got a number of emails this week. And begin with a follow-up on our Jerry Lawler discussion. This comes from TC. He says, I agree with you that Lawler was one of the all-time greats. His promos on Saturday mornings convinced me to buy tickets for the Monday Night House Show more often than not. At the time, WMC-TV gave those house show results on the late Monday night news and would show clips of the really big feuds during the sports segment. A couple quick questions, though, related to your comments talking about Jerry Lawler. We got four of them here. We'll just take them one at a time. One, was putting the AWA title on Lawler the only real option Vern Gagne had at that point?
You know what? It wasn't an option for Vern Gagne. Vern Gagne didn't have any options. I mean, it was more about Jerry Lawler and Memphis Wrestling, because Jerry Lawler had made this promise that he was going to win a world title, and that was the whole, you know, that was the overall story of Jerry Lawler, heel or babyface, as he rose to be the king of Memphis, was his quest for the world title, and it was finally a chance for Jerry Lawler and Memphis Wrestling to bring Kurt Hennig in as the AWA champion. They brought Nick Bockwinkel as the AWA champion. They brought, you know, they had Jack Briscoe and Harley Race and Ric Flair. Ric Flair came in one time for Jerry Lawler's challenge.
How many times did Race come in?
I remember an hour. There's an hour long. They had an hour long match that was that ended. So they had one hour long match. So it was a really good match. They had another match where Jimmy Valiant hit Jerry Lawler at the end of it with a Coke bottle. This was a time when that stuff wasn't done very often, so it was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And to do their feud, but I couldn't count. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, because, you know, they might have taken the Jerry Lawler Harley Race match around the horn, you know, around the Memphis. You know, Memphis had a circuit, and
yeah,
Louisville and Memphis and Arkansas and all that. But I don't know that often. They did more with Nick Bockwinkel. Nick Bockwinkel was the one that they, you know, they were in the AWA, and they did much more with Bockwinkel and some really good stuff with that. So, you know, AWA was a known name, but the reason why I say it wasn't an option for Vern Gagne was Vern Gagne was out of options. I mean, at that point, the AWA was pretty much dead on its feet. And, I mean, it would get worse, but they weren't running that many house shows. They had their television, but, you know, they had Las Vegas, but they really didn't have that many places to go.
Throw in, not to be a huge history of the AWA type thing, but Vern was also a little bit of a traditionalist to that. He wasn't willing to just put the title on anybody. Like, you know, he wasn't going to say, well, Northern Barbarian looks like he might be, or the guy would eventually be nailed. You know, Kevin Kelly has a good body. Let's do that. He wouldn't just throw it on just anybody.
Yeah,
that's why Larry's, you know, after Stan Hansen, it was Nick Bockwinkel or Larry Zbyszko or Kurt Hennig. He wouldn't even put it on Greg Gagne, his own son, because he knew that was not credible. In other words, I'm sorry, I didn't make my point. That was my fault for pausing, but he didn't really see the world title as a way to create a star. He wouldn't throw it on a belt hoping it's stuck.
Right, and the other thing, you know, there's that part where there was the matter of, did you wrestle the way Vern Gagne wanted a world champion wrestler to wrestle?
Yeah.
You had to have that, he wanted that amateur background, and he was, you know, by the end of Hulk Hogan's stay, he was willing to put it on Hulk Hogan, but that was an issue before that was, you know, did he have that amateur wrestling background? Was he a shooter and that kind of thing? And,
were you
and
so that was, amateur wrestling background? Were you second generation, or were you the son-in-law? Something like, some combination of those had to be at play.
Right, as it kind
or,
of turned
or
out.
Or were you
so,
Jerry Lawler, a legend? You know, because Lawler didn't have any of those three, but he was, you know,
well, at that point, you know, at that point, AWA was willing to reach out and work with, you know, they never had worked with another promotion before, to the extent they were working with Memphis USWA and also World Class. And World Class was, because these were desperate promotions up against the national promotions of WWF in particular and NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions, and they were trying to come up with anything, and this was the idea to put together to lead to their first pay-per-view, and they did the pay-per-view. They did that Super Clash pay-per-view that did not work. But, you know, the idea was, well, we have television in this area. We're strong in this area, and Memphis is strong in their area, and World Class is strong in Texas, and we put everything together, we can do something. But Jerry Lawler, you know, they basically brought in Kurt Hennig, and, you know, when he won the title in Memphis, it was probably the last really big Memphis show, kind of the beginning of the end of Jerry Lawler as a real draw in Memphis, and Memphis wrestling as a real big deal. But Mid-South Coliseum, and you know, it's a huge celebration in Memphis. The mayor of Memphis made it Jerry Lawler Day, and they ran one of the great scams ever, which was I thought of the day, which was not only did they get this big house, but they claimed on Memphis television that the AWA was going to appoint a special referee. It was either going to be Curt Hennig's father, or it was going to be Jackie Fargo. And they wanted the fans to all call in, and on one of those 99 cents a minute numbers, and vote for which one they want. And so, of course, the people in Memphis are the ones that they're voting, and they're all voting as fast as they can for Jackie Fargo. So it was, So that was pretty good. That was pretty good stuff. And Lawler won, and it was a really good match, and it was kind of the end of the day. Because he ended up leaving soon after that to go beat Mr. Perfect in WWF. But the point being, that was more for the Memphis promotion. Memphis promotion much more benefited from it than the AWA did. The AWA was just looking to make a deal to end up on pay per view and to do anything. But there was pretty much a die being cast even at that point.
Yeah.
As far as the fate of the AWA.
Let's see if some other questions cover some other bases here. He's got four of them. Did Lawler still have enough drawing power at that time to have made a real difference for the AWA, or was it too late no matter what? And I guess contextually, this wasn't like maybe Jerry Lawler could save the AWA. It wasn't really that. I mean, as you kind of said, it had to do with giving Lawler a legit legacy world title, and it was the only option that was there that was really available to him. But it wasn't as if Lawler was a guy who the AWA could bring in and actually think, wow, this can turn us around. This can make us competitive, and we might actually get out of the dying number three spot that they were in.
Yeah, I don't think there was anybody that they could have brought in. I mean, I think that, even you bring in Hulk Hogan at the height of Hulkamania at that time, and for some incredible reason, you thought to go back to the AWA. They didn't have the television. They didn't have the marketing expertise. They didn't have the structure anymore to do much of anything. But the thing with Jerry Lawler was he was one of the strong regional draws. He'd have to go to, but he wasn't nationally known. I mean, if you read the magazines,
he was nationally known, but he wasn't a draw nationally, and there is a difference.
Right. I guess that's
the way to put it. I think everybody knew Lawler was, most everybody.
When you read the magazine, if you were aware of the National Wrestling Center, you didn't know who Lawler was. But yeah, it was like, because when he worked in the AWA, he would travel to the AWA and work in Chicago, work in Minneapolis and all that. And he went down to Southwest Championship Wrestling and worked there as a heel. And, he was an okay draw, but it wasn't anywhere near what he was in Memphis. And he'd work kind of in a different way. He worked in Georgia a little bit like that too, and in Florida for a little while. But he would always travel back and forth. He wasn't Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage where you go, or Dusty Rhodes where you go, or Road Warriors where you go all across the country and people would go, wow, here they come. I want to go see them. It was more, he was a regional draw, but one of the best ones it was at the time in his own region.
Question number three was, did house shows go up while Lawler was a champ? There really weren't. It wasn't like a full fledged house show circuit at that point.
Yeah, there wasn't a house show circuit, and I'd say no. I mean, he did wrestle. He wrestled in Las Vegas and Wisconsin and some of the stuff.
I mean, he was there to give them in part a national, a relatively respectable national name who could hold that world title on their TV spot, and it was good for Lawler because it gave him the chance to be a national star.
Yeah.
This is something too. I think. I mean, I interviewed Jerry Lawler for a Towards Your Book way back, and this would be. It hasn't been put online or even published in 15 years. But some of this stuff would be, I'm sure, was covered during that interview. So one of these days, we'll be reissuing those.
Yeah, I always I always quote that when I'm complaining about the draft. This interview 15 years ago. So.
What?
I always quote him from that interview from 15 years ago about don't have to think about that stupid draft because I'm always, you know, always to think about it. You asked him, I always got a big kick out of yes and no. You had $5 million.
Oh, yeah.
And you were going to start a promotion, and he just went. Because he was, you know, I mean, he was, in the, you know, he was a big wrestling deal and all that, but he worked it as a business from week to week, and, you know, he was just like thinking, I have $5 million, I could quit and, you know, stay home. And, you know, it's like, and I, so he just goes, you know, if I had $5 million, I have to spend it on a wrestling promotion.
That was actually one of the funniest answers in history, and no surprise it came from Lawler. Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember reading that, just like that, because I was just like, you know, he kind of has a point. If you had, it's like,
yeah,
if you had $5 million to make your third grade classroom really look good. And it was like, well, if I had $5 million, like.
All right. Fourth and final question. Was there anybody left in the AWA, World Class, or USWA to use against Lawler on a national level other than Kerry Von Erich? All right. That concludes the 5-minute free clip of today's VIP audio show. If you're interested in having access to the complete audio shows that run between 10 minutes up to sometimes an hour, 15 minutes each, just click on the VIP sign-up info button in the upper left corner of the screen at pwtorch.com on any page, right under our logo. And you can get more details on all the features you get with the VIP membership, including around 50 VIP exclusive audio shows per month, start to finish, along with a lot more ad-free access to the site, the PW Torch Today PDF bulletins that come out most days that I write with the breaking news and analysis, and so much more. Hundreds of back issues from the Torch newsletter, both in text and PDF format now. And a lot more. Just check out the whole list of VIP features. It costs $7.50 per month to become a member. It is cheaper if you subscribe for longer term. And we also have an availability of paper copy subscriptions to the Torch newsletter where you can have it delivered to your doorstep all 16 pages every week with news, analysis, exclusive columns, interviews, and more. And with the newsletter subscription, it's about 75 cents more per week to get the newsletter delivered to your home, but you get all the other online VIP benefits along with that. So basically, it's just cost of postage and printing we pass along to you. Otherwise, it doesn't really matter to us either way which option you choose. But if you'd like to get that 16-page paper copy delivered to your door, you might want to check out that option. Otherwise, you can go with the eSub option, and I hope you'll maybe give us a try for 1 month and see what it's like to have access to the complete VIP audio shows every single day. All right, that's it for me. Until next time, on behalf of the entire Torch staff, I thank you for listening, and I sign off.